A quiet, almost invisible shift in how America is treating North Korea, South Korea, Pakistan, and the UAE is exposing the one brutal rule every rising nation on earth needs to learn before it learns it the hard way. There's a phrase we throw around in geopolitics without ever really stopping to ask who it applies to, rogue nation. Say it out loud, and a very specific set of countries probably floats into your head. But here's the uncomfortable exercise worth actually doing. Strip the label down to what it really means: a state that operates by its own rules, discards its commitments the moment they stop being convenient, and treats every relationship as disposable the instant its usefulness expires. And hold that definition up against the story you're about to read from the spy analyst. Trump, Kim Jong-un, and North Korea, Washington's use and throw foreign policy. The usual suspects. The sanctioned ones. The ones on the watch lists. The country that fits it best isn't the one sanctioned on paper. It's the one sitting quietly behind the curtain, orchestrating almost every other flashpoint in this story. It's the United States. That's not a rhetorical flourish. By the time you finish this piece, you'll understand exactly why there's a strange, old piece of wisdom that applies here better than almost anywhere else in geopolitics. With a power like this, neither friendship nor enmity really serves you. Ally with it, and you're disposable the moment your usefulness runs out. Oppose it, and you absorb the full weight of its retaliation. It is, in a very real sense, not worth being friends with and not worth being enemies with either. The only sane posture is clear-eyed and sentimental distance. And since Trump returned to the driver's seat, that pattern hasn't softened. It's escalated into territory that would have seemed unthinkable a few years ago. What you're about to read is one specific, very recent example of exactly how far the pattern now extends. Read it carefully, because by the end, you'll be doing something most people never bother to do with foreign policy news: connecting the dots. Once you connect them, every other seemingly unrelated headline from Washington over the past few months will suddenly click into place in your mind, one after another, like pieces of a puzzle you didn't know you were holding. Here's where it starts. Ask yourself the first honest question this story demands. Why is the United States, at this exact moment, going out of its way to extend warmth, support, and something close to public endorsement toward one of the most sanctioned, isolated regimes on the planet, North Korea? To understand why Trump is being gentle with Kim Jong-un, you have to rewind not to Korea, but to the Middle East. The United States recently found itself dragged into direct confrontation with Iran. It's easy to read headlines about that conflict and move on. But something happened underneath the headlines that almost nobody outside defense circles is talking about. During that confrontation, America's military hardware, its interceptor missiles, its precision munitions, its broader stockpile of frontline weaponry took a real and significant hit. Not symbolic, structural. The United States entered that fight without properly answering a basic question first. If we burn through our stockpiles here, can our own military-industrial complex, the vast network of defense manufacturers that's supposed to be the beating heart of American hard power, rebuild them fast enough to still project power everywhere else we need to? That question wasn't seriously wargamed before the shooting started. And now, after the fact, the answer looks uncomfortable. Not really. Not fast enough. A superpower that projects invincibility to the world quietly discovered, mid-crisis, that its own war chest has limits, and that discovery is now reshaping decisions happening thousands of miles away, in a completely different theater, involving a completely different country, North Korea. Because once Washington realized its stockpile was thinner than it assumed, a second realization followed immediately. We cannot afford new fires breaking out everywhere at once. Every other flashpoint on the map suddenly needs to be managed down, cooled off, minimized, not because Washington has had a change of heart, but because its ammunition cabinet is not as full as it used to be. North Korea is one of those flashpoints. So Trump extends a hand. The specific fear driving this is worth spelling out clearly, step by step. Because the original framing, we should keep North Korea calm so it doesn't get involved with Taiwan, sounds abstract until you trace the actual mechanics of it. Picture the map. If Pyongyang were to become an active, visible participant in a Taiwan-related flashpoint, even indirectly, even just by lending logistics, basing access, or symbolic military backing to Beijing in a moment of crisis, Washington would suddenly be facing a genuine two-front problem, and not a manic, evil one. Here's what overstretch actually means in concrete terms, not just as a buzzword. The U.S. military is built to plan around a limited number of simultaneous major contingencies at once it cannot fight, arm, and logistically support full-scale crises in the Middle East and East Asia and Eastern Europe at the same time without severely compromising its response in at least one theater. North Korea sits inside the same broad orbit as Russia and China, geographically close, politically dependent, militarily entangled through the exact weapons testing relationship we're about to walk through. Munitions, interceptors, and trained personnel are finite resources. They can be surged toward one crisis, but not toward three simultaneously without dangerous gaps opening up somewhere. Layer a live Taiwan flashpoint on top of an unresolved Iran situation, and Washington isn't looking at difficult. It's looking at a scenario where it might not have enough interceptors, munitions, or ready capacity to credibly respond to all three fronts at once, which is precisely the kind of exposed, overextended position no superpower wants to be caught in, especially not one whose entire global authority rests on the credible threat that it can respond anywhere, anytime. Now overlay that onto what we already know. The U.S. just discovered, in real time, during the Iran confrontation, that its own stockpiles are thinner than assumed. There is a third reason sitting underneath the first two, and it's the one most readers already sense instinctively before anyone spells it out for them. North Korea is no longer a regional problem that Washington can afford to treat lightly, because North Korea is no longer just a regional threat. Over the past several years, Pyongyang has developed and tested intercontinental ballistic missiles credibly capable of reaching the continental United States, paired with a nuclear weapons program it has refused, repeatedly and publicly, to abandon. It's about the far more immediate, far more personal fact that Kim Jong-un now sits on a capability that can put an American city within range, which means every single interaction Washington has with Pyongyang carries a homeland deterrence weight that no other flashpoint in this story quite matches. That changes the entire calculus in a way the Taiwan proxy fear alone does not. This isn't only about whether North Korea might lend Beijing logistical support in some future Taiwan contingency. You don't need a proxy theory to explain why a superpower goes soft on a regime that can hit its own mainland. You just need to look at the map and the missile specs. That reality alone would justify caution. Combined with depleted stockpiles and Taiwan overstretch fears, it becomes close to overwhelming, and it explains something the other two reasons can't fully account for on their own. Why North Korea, uniquely among every actor in this story, gets courted rather than merely deprioritized. South Korea said no to Washington and